Welcome back to another episode of Cargumentative, where men in matching Porsche t-shirts and a girl with tattoos talk about cars and all things automotive. Guys, good to have you all back in the studio. And lady, we've got a special guest joining us today. Goes by the name of Faye, who knows Mike. Faye, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's only a pleasure. Thanks for being here. We're going to hop into some news, because it's always a good place to start. And I'm going to swing the mic over to Mark Paluta, who's looking intently at his phone.
Yeah, look, I've only got a little bit of news today. Yeah. And I thought we'd bring some bike news to the show.
Because you like bikes, huh?
I do like bikes. Mm.
And it's particularly relevant because Faye is a massive bike fan.
Absolutely.
I mean, just to let the listeners know that she has a tattoo of the words Valentino Rossi on her wrist.
Amazing.
Which is serious.
Amazing.
And just to put it out there that Nadav doesn't understand bikes.
Okay, not in the slightest.
I will talk.
So Mark's going to go
language,
ahead and I'm just going
to... I'm going to talk. Yeah, you'll see. So, big news is Ducati launched a new bike this week called the Panigale V4R, all right? Now, Dave actually sent me a picture of the bike.
I did. I thought they'd be interested. I'm a good friend.
But the big news, what?
No, I want to see a picture of it.
No, I don't know. I'll find your picture now. The big news is its power-to-weight ratio. So, this bike in race prep. So, race prep means you put an Akrapovic exhaust on it. Makes 234 horsepower. And it weighs 165.5 kilos, which is a power-to-weight ratio of 1,413 horsepower per ton.
So it's basically like sitting on top of a missile.
It's more than a megawatt per ton.
That's impressive.
So, I mean, just to put a bit of context. So a Veyron, what?
Veyron, a Chiron.
A Chiron is?
740 horsepower per ton.
Which is 1 gigawatt.
1.1 gigawatts.
Yeah. Something around that line.
Anyway, so that's
Hold on. So it's got more than double the power-to-weight ratio of a Chiron.
I mean, perspective.
And how much is a bike like that?
I'm going to say landed in this country, $600 to $700 grand.
I mean,
it's a lot of money for a bike, but for the horsepower.
I mean, I think that's the amazing thing with a bike is that you know, in a car, if you want to go as fast as a Formula One car, you need to go and spend stupid money. A Chiron's
plenty
probably going to be 20 to 30 million rand.
Yeah.
This, for 700,000 rand, you can go as fast in a straight line as arguably as a MotoGP bike.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the fastest way to die.
Yes, and funny enough, that is actually my life philosophy. It's two things. Mm. Aeroplanes and motorbike, impossible to have a small accident.
Mm. True story.
Agreed.
The other news from Ducati.
You ride bikes, don't you, Faye?
Yes, I do.
Me too.
Oh, really? What do you ride?
We dig bikes.
So just give us 2 minutes of education on bikes. Like,
what do you want to know, Mike?
Why do you like
it? What do you ride? Okay,
what's the point?
I've got a
ZX9R.
Whoa.
ZX9R.
Yeah.
So how fast is something like that?
Yo, she's amazing, hey? I've only pushed her to about 180, and then I was just like, no.
But it could probably do about 260.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, easily. Fantastic bike.
Frightening.
I'm chilled to the bone. I am.
So the thing about a bike is it makes the power and speed so easily accessible. I mean, you don't need a lot of money, and you can go really fast. And the sensation of speed is second to no car you'll ever drive. Imagine having – it's probably a very fast convertible. Might give you a similar sensation, but it's amazing.
So it's all about power to weight and power to price ratio.
Exactly.
And it both wins on you know.
Yeah, you can't beat
both things.
I have no doubt that it must be the most amazing thing to ride a bike, but I know with my personality, I just can't go near one. So I have a thing. I won't go on a Vespa because I know if I go on one, within 6 months, I'm going to dress up like a Power Ranger and try and put my knee on the ground.
Exactly. Or we have said that we will get you on a bike, on a runway, with no traffic, just to experience the exhilaration.
I can't. I'm telling you. I won't be able to do it only once. It's just not possible.
Okay, one more piece of news from Ducati. So, I don't know if you know this, but Ducati's owned by the VW Group, directly actually by Audi. And they've taken Audi's suspension technology called Skyhook. So it's a magnetic, the magnetic iron filings inside the suspension fluid that they can magnetize and make it hard or soft. And they've put that in their bikes, in their Enduro bike, which is very cool. So you're going to have soft suspension for off-road and hard suspension for on-road. Very good news, guys.
Amazing. Okay, I can see my dove.
No, no, dove's literally going
to
have a heart
attack. Guys, it's relevant to cars. That leads into cars. So talk about IDs now.
Do you know what's even more relevant?
Tell me.
Perhaps. Cars. It's a car, and it's actually a Bucky.
It's not a car.
And it's made by Volkswagen, and it's a new concept that they've just unveiled. It's called the Tarok.
Yeah? Small, tell us about it.
Smaller version. It's basically like a small double cab, compact. Smaller than an Amarok, which is
smaller.
Yeah,
so it's like a half ton.
Are you telling me they have just launched the new Bantam?
Exactly.
Well, the Nissan 1400.
could you put a bike in the back?
You could. Yeah, you could put many things. A dog. You could put your kids
What's
in the back.
What's its payload? Does it say there?
It's still a concept.
It's still a concept. Yeah. So probably not much. But
probably 750 kilos.
Yeah, I'd say
we could probably rest assured. As a VW concept, it'll probably make production. Yeah. Is what they usually do.
Would you take it to the rugby, put the seats forward, and play the 6x9s that are behind the seats?
Totally. That's totally my vibe. Huh?
Would it come in a diesel?
They're saying TSI, and they're saying 2-liter diesel.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. That makes me think, sorry to jump in, but this week I saw something and it reminded me of the discussion we had last week around, or 2 weeks ago, about the diesel like basically coming to an end. If diesel comes to an end, we might lose one of the greatest ever badges on a vehicle.
What?
The BMW 530D.
Oh.
Yeah. which if you read it upside down.
For our South African
For our South African friends.
Means a very rude
very
South African
rude
word.
South African word. And I think it'll be a shame to see it go, because I actually saw one of the new shape BM 5 Series 530D, and I thought that badge is one of the last.
Mm. Absolute classic.
True story.
So, Thomas, your news item is making me wish we were carried on talking about bikes, frankly.
Yeah.
For me to say is a big deal.
It's cool to have a smaller, compact bucky on the market.
Just showed faith.
Yeah.
Because it's important in this country as well. People want a smaller bucky. There hasn't been one around.
It's a utility vehicle.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
You mean yeah? What?
No. So I think that the bucky in South Africa obviously is a massively important car. And that's why, you know, making fun of it, but like the 1400 and the Corsa Bucky, which became the Chev, I think, small ute. I mean, it's an important car for South Africa.
Keeps the country running. There's no question about that.
I really wanted one of those Corsa Buckies when they first came out. I was like, you know, because I was a working man back then, and, you know, I used to carry lots of stuff around, speakers and amps, because I was like, you know, a DJ. And I was like, I need this car in my life. It's just so cool.
It was practical.
Did you buy one?
No, how?
My dad actually always had Buckies, half-ton Buckies. And they are. They built this country. Eh?
Yeah, they're fantastic things.
The Bantam was particularly good.
Can we have a motorsport news item? Do we have room?
Vietnam. Vietnam's getting a Formula 1 Grand Prix.
Yes, it is.
Hanoi. Downtown. Okay. Yeah,
that's amazing. It is amazing.
What a road track.
I think it is, 2020.
It's absolutely ridiculous that we can have so many races in Asia and we still don't have one here in South Africa. And you know for a fact, if they had it at Kyalami, they'd sell it out. Every single session would be completely capacity.
Well, the Blancpain series is coming next year.
Yes, it is.
If anyone doesn't know, that's sort of the Kyalami 9 hour is coming back for 2019. Lamborghinis, Corvettes.
BMWs, Audis.
Quite an interesting series.
Ferraris.
Mercs. I'm kind of hoping that if that is successful, that it might open the door to a whole lot of very interesting motorsport at Kyalami.
And to all of the companies that have cars that are available, we are thinking of entering a Cargumentative car, so we're just looking for a sponsor of the car.
We are. We're actually just going to take Mark Paluta's Aston. Yep. And you're going to strip it out on a weekend in your garage.
Absolutely.
Because it's very handy.
But it's half done. I mean, the rear parcel shelf is out, so that thing's sounding amazing already.
It's just missing a wing.
Yeah. So we just need some carbon fiber.
So we need a screwdriver, a drill, and a hammer. That's fine. That's all we need.
Yeah.
A little bit of duct tape.
Some balsa wood.
Balsa wood. There you go.
So that's the plan.
What about the Jaguar I-Pace? And sorry.
Yeah, Jaguar I-Pace.
We'll get to that now. Nadav has a very important piece of motorsport news.
I just wanted, if nobody heard about the Sebastian Loeb story, I thought it was important news to communicate. Sebastian Loeb won another rally. Why is that even news? Because Sebastian Loeb has won all the rallies. So we're talking about World Rally Championship now.
Sebastian Loeb is arguably the greatest rally driver of all time.
Arguably the greatest. So he won another rally. So what? Well, the so what is that he actually retired 5 years ago. And then he was brought back by Citroën into the slowest car in the field this season just because they needed a driver to fill the space. And he only went out and won it.
Yeah.
5 years He's after amazing. He retired amazing. In the slowest car. Yeah. I just think that's worth mentioning. It's absolutely remarkable. The man is a phenomenal.
Absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Just the question that we got to ask, is world rallying in any kind of good space at the moment? You know, I'm not taking it away from the fact, and I love to see legends do amazing things. The problem is that, I mean, I'm a petrol head. I watch every single Formula One race, watch Le Mans, watch Dakar stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying, like, we don't, I haven't watched any world
rallying.
You know
what it is? It became
forever.
Very expensive, like Formula One, and they had a couple of manufacturers pull out. So the big ones, Subaru, Mitsubishi, they pulled out. JDM, sorry. So you were left with Renault, Citroën, Ford. I think VW made, I don't know if they're still in there.
VW?
Yeah, they're still in World Rally.
No, not.
Mini? Is Mini there?
No, I think they pulled out as
so
well.
So it's Citroën, Renault, Ford.
Yeah. Peugeot pulled out. Ford is there. Hyundai came back in a big way.
With the,
and I'm not sure if Skoda is still in for the VW group.
So it's, there's not too many manufacturers, and they couldn't get TV rights and that kind of thing. So you can catch the odd race online, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Coverage is terrible.
I will just say this to all listeners, particularly young listeners. Go and look on YouTube at the videos of Group B rallying.
Whoa.
And if you go and watch a couple of them, you'll quickly understand why it was completely banned. It was insane. But, I mean, that's what we...
The heyday.
Those cars were making 1,000 horsepower.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes more.
On
sometimes
dirt roads.
More. With crowds.
Two-wheel drive.
Sometimes with no road, because the crowds would stand in the middle of the road so they could give thumbs up and jump out of the way at the last second.
Remarkable.
Like spectacular.
I actually watched a documentary on Group B a couple of months ago.
What's it called?
I can't remember, but anyway, it was on YouTube, and I'll find it for you.
Thank you.
But I think it was the Audi team. They were like stripping the car after a stage, and they found in the grill two human fingers.
Oh, wow.
Seriously, because guys, it was a game where people would pat the cars as they go past, and somebody's fingers got caught in the
and amputated.
And amputated these two, and they were like kind of semi-bride. slightly charred fingers because they'd been on top of this like
unbelievable. That's a hell of a story.
Great story, Tom.
Great story for the guy who lost his fingers too.
Yeah. It's excellent. Okay. Guys, we've got a little bit of time for one more news story. I want to touch on Jaguar I-Pace because that's a big thing. Electric car. It's going to be the electric car with the biggest range here
electric
in South Africa.
Electric only, not even a hybrid. Eh?
Yep. And that's starting at 1.6.
1.6
Why
million
did they
rand.
Make it so expensive? I mean, I saw one in the flesh in Frankfurt a few months ago. It's a pretty cool looking car. I mean, and it is a car. It's sort of it's not really an SUV, but 1.6 million.
1.6, and it goes up to 1.9.
Wow, that's too expensive.
And I love what the 1.9 gets you. It gets you first edition.
Mm.
The manufacturers are coming out with these special editions before the thing is even launched.
To put it into context, I think the I-Pace is approximately the size of a Range Rover Sport.
Yeah, it's like a
sort of a mid-size SUV, not the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And a Range Rover Sport you could get for
it's not the size of a Range Rover Sport. It's much smaller.
Even
smaller.
Yeah, it's
definitely
smaller.
A Freelander.
So
yeah,
Velar?
I think it's more. It was more X3 size.
Okay.
It didn't feel much bigger than X3. That.
Those cars are between 700 and 1 million rand. So you're paying a 600 to 900,000 rand premium for the fact that it's electric.
But
without an infrastructure in South Africa yet,
promised it. No, hold on. They've made a fast charge station in Harrismith. So now you can drive to Durban.
You can. Mm. So yeah. They've promised, Jaguar have promised that all the major routes will be covered. I can't remember what time frame, but they've promised that with the introduction of the I-Pace.
It all happens next year. That's when it goes ahead.
Indeed.
So, yeah, that's it for the news. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about embarrassing car modifications. Welcome back to Cogumentative. In this segment, we're going to be dissecting our history of like really bad car mods. You know, embarrassing things we've done to our cars in the past. I don't think the Dove's ever done modifications.
Not true.
Oh, yeah.
Modified things.
But I have. I mean, I remember my first car was a Golf 2 GTI 16 valve. Okay.
You've discussed this before.
And I got some money for my birthday. So, you know, what does a young 19-year-old guy do? Doesn't save it. He goes off to go and get something that he doesn't need. In this case, it was going to some like seedy, slightly dodgy exhaust place like in the heart of Randburg called like Boss Auto or Super Boss Auto or something. And I was like, yeah, these guys sound legit. These guys are going to know exactly what to do to make my car better. Now, first of all, I wanted to go and buy myself a K&N air filter, but of course
you did.
In the latest like issue of Speed and Sound, it said there's no point in getting an air filter if you don't have an exhaust. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to go for the exhaust first. Anyway, long story short, I got this massive like 60 mil free flow exhaust system from the branch all the way out.
60 mil?
It was enormous. It was huge. And the guy's
super
like, oh. He was huge. It was ridiculous. Anyway, so then I drove it home, and halfway home, I was like, you know what? I need to swallow my pride here. This was terrible. This was a terrible, terrible thing to do. It sounded cool for 5 minutes, but then it was like this booming, droning. Then I got onto the freeway. And I sat at like 120, and it was just in that zone of like this crescendoous booming, warbling. Eventually, I got home, and my dad heard me coming up the street. And he was like, I hope that's not your car, because otherwise I'm moving you off to Boxburg, and you can go and stay there.
That's controversial, hey? That's controversial.
Very controversial.
And just so you be clear, there was a solution to that, and you just didn't take
it. No, but
you could have just fitted a bigger sound system.
There was. No, I didn't have budget. So then, long story short from that, I ended up going to another exhaust shop because I was too embarrassed to go back and say, guys, this is a terrible mistake. Please, can we do something? But I went off to another place, managed to get like some money off by swapping out the exhaust. So like I ended up paying double for the stupid exhaust system that I didn't need. It was a complete fiasco. And then the second worst thing I did was put big sound. My hairdresser was actually selling, he was into car sound. And he had all this stuff, like this massive monoblock amp and a subwoofer system and all that kind of stuff. I had 6x9, so I thought, well, okay, I'll just put this massive sub in, which I did. And again, had it on for like 10 minutes, went up and down the Parkview strip with all my windows down, pumping like Dr. Dre, you know, and getting all this like young, angsty aggression out of my system. And
I thought, how old were you?
I was about 25.
Old enough to know better.
24. And then I thought, no, this is terrible. I can't actually, it's too much. It's too boomy. It's terrible. I don't have a boot anymore. I can't put anything. And so again, ended up going back, asking the guys to take it out and taking it back to my hairdresser and saying, can't do this.
I had a big sound system, but it got removed for me.
As it does.
Yeah.
So I spend my life undoing mods. Buy a car, it's modded to death, undo it to try and make it decent again. That's what I do.
But that's not embarrassing. So you don't have any embarrassing...
No.
Not really. You keep it on a level.
It's not
you
possible.
Keep it clean.
You went PNC.
No, I didn't. I didn't modify anything. I mean,
you must have.
No, I bought stuff that was modified, and I spent my life. I've done a big sound system and an Alpha 145 I had, but it was done properly. You could turn it down.
What's the worst mod you've had to unmodify then?
Well, okay, so I bought a Golf 3. Similar to the one you had, a Golf GSX, and it had an aftermarket sunroof fitted.
We're bastards.
So we're bastards. So that you cannot undo. A glass sunroof.
It only tilted. It only tilted and made you hot.
There's no going back from that. Yeah, it only tilted and made you hot, exactly.
So, Faye, you're a millennial, post-millennial, like...
Generation really, Z.
Generation Z. What's your view on mods?
I don't know. It depends. Like, I really love JDM cars. Like, really, really love them.
Okay, so the rule here we've learned is that our listeners don't necessarily know what JDM is, so you need to explain.
Japanese cars. Your R34s, your R32s, and your Supras.
Stuff you don't get here. So, like, Japanese domestic market.
Yes.
And can we legally import these things?
Yeah, you can get them. There's a place in Durban called Rospo or something. Not that I'm endorsing them, but you can buy stuff there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't finance it, but you can buy it cash.
That's cool.
But you do get cool Japanese cars, yeah?
And Japanese cars, you reckon, should be modded, like as a standard?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's nice to buy a car and turn it into something that you've built for yourself instead of going and buying a Ferrari, which everyone can just have. Yeah. It's all the same.
So for our listeners out there, Faye is no stranger to modded cars, having modelled in front of a Liberty Walk 458. Which,
488.
Was it a 488?
It was a 488.
Wow.
Nadav's favorite car.
Nadav doesn't like it.
Nadav secretly has a poster of one on the back of his bathroom door.
Oh dear.
What color was it?
Probably purple.
No, it was like a matte off-white kind of color.
Of course it's matte.
Okay. And the thing about a Liberty Walk is that you buy the car for 5 or 6 million rand and then you spend probably another 2 million on a Liberty Walk kit. And the thing about a Liberty Walk kit, if anyone's had a look at these things, they are bolt-on, but properly bolt-on, like as in drill into the fenders and extend them permanently. To reverse one of those things is just not possible.
Oh, so it's an irreversible mod?
Yep.
Pretty much.
Wow, okay.
But I agree, Japanese cars do pull off the whole tuning thing better. They're just, there's something about them that, like, you know, encourages you to tune. And the whole culture.
Yeah, you want to customize it as soon as you get it done.
Yeah, it's like customizing like a Golf or something, just it kind of seems weird. I don't know.
But well, if you do that, it to brings Subaru me to what I did. I had a Golf.
I want to hear your embarrassing stories, because you probably have many.
I do have many, and actually the what I'm going to end with is it could well make everyone except for Faye cry. but I will talk about it. But I my first car was a malachite green Golf GSX 1.8. And it was really, really awesome. I'm very fortunate to have had it. But I did what Tom did. So every little bit of cash I did, I transformed that thing until it looked like sort of like a VR6. So I started off by color-coding the bumpers, because when it came out, it didn't have color-coded bumpers. It was one of the first generations. And then I added a roof spoiler, but not just the one that came out. It was a Zender roof spoiler that sat proud and it had a third brake light. It was unbelievable. Then I added Momo Ferrari Engineering wheels to it. And with
the
color,
worst wheels in history ever.
But they were called Momo Ferrari Engineering. And I had Goodyear Eagle F1 tires on it, which had the greatest tread of any tire ever made. They weren't really great, but I had them. And then, to finish it off, I got little eyelids, so it made it look like it was slightly slanting its eyes. So this thing was the most menacing, stant-looking GSX slow 1.8. That on such big rubber, could not get that thing to budge at all. But it was cool, and it was properly personalized, and I really loved that car. I really did. So I then went and started off with the Porsches, and I had a couple leading up to a 1984 Carrera 3.2 in Guards Red, which was a really, really good car. But in a moment of absolute insanity, I took a completely unmolested, full service history, no aircon, no sunroof car on Bilsteins. And I decided to cut it and put on a 964 kit.
No, you did not.
Are you serious?
This is the first time I'm hearing about this. It's disgusting.
That's awful.
You shut your mouth. You don't tell us any more about this.
And probably the worst exhaust that you've ever heard. But
I hope you put some TSW Hockenheims on as well.
No, I actually put on, I'm not sure what the rims were.
You put rims?
I had to, because I couldn't have fixed the 964 bumpers. So I had to find a rim.
Mark.
And at this point, I had run out of cash. So I was now trying to make this thing look as good as possible. But it all works out well in the end, because in 2004, I won the time trial series at the Porsche Club in my class. And it was lighter, it was faster, and it all ended up well for a while in that. Straight after that, I realized the error of my ways, and luckily the parts that we'd cut off to put the rear prestige panel on, we put them back, and I took it back to original. the car got stolen about 2 months later, and that was that. So, oh.
so just to draw on that, are we saying that modification is maybe okay, particularly when it improves the vehicle? So now, just to give a little bit of background, manufacturers spend millions of man hours and millions of dollars perfecting their cars, finding the perfect compromise between this and that, and that and the other, and bringing it to market is the best representation of what they could possibly do, which is why modifying cars are often viewed as being short-sighted. How can we possibly... It's blasphemous. How can we possibly do better than Porsche or VW or Nissan, for argument's sake? But we know that in certain instances, modification can work. And maybe that's when JDM, I feel like, so Japanese cars, it was more functional than aesthetic. It was they're seeking a better car. Perhaps in a certain circumstance, you compromise it slightly in some ways, but it improves on track. Or is that correct?
Well, I think,
are we okay with that?
So look, I think what we all have to agree is that we're not going to be able to engineer better than what was made. I mean, so you're going to every time you do something, there'll be some kind of trade-off on it. But I think cosmetically and sound and things like that. So you've got a beautiful 1970 911T. 71 911T, carb fed, but you've personalized it. It's got a couple of decals on it. It's got a very stupid exhaust, which is amazing.
And sounds like just a monster truck.
Yeah, it does, and it's just phenomenal. And you know, I mean, the question here is, I'm asking a lady who's got some very serious body art. Our body is doing stuff to the car similar to personalizing yourself.
Yeah, I think so. You're building a car to fit like who you are and how you want it. So I think that's like something really special because you're building it exactly how you want it to be and how you want it to drive, how you want it to sound. So that's what I really dig about Japanese cars.
So it can be like...
No one else will have it.
Exactly. It can be like a physical embodiment of yourself on wheels.
Exactly.
You're only encouraging Mark because he did a thing last week on saying that what the car says about you.
Yeah.
And that it says a lot about your personality. So what does a metallic gold wrap on a Lamborghini say?
Terrible. That's the most terrible thing you've said.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
There's actually a company.
But there's a grain of interest to what you said, is that a metallic gold wrap is exactly that. It's a wrap. It's reversible.
Mm.
So maybe that's another interesting way to look at modifying cars. My Porsche that you've brought up, for argument's sake, everything that I've done to it that's to my taste, to personalize it, when people see it, they know it's Nadav's car, okay? But it's all reversible, and that's been my ground rules for that car. If I modify it, it must be able to be brought back to standard.
Yeah.
So a wrap, perhaps that's acceptable because in the end you take it off
and it keeps the paint safe.
Speaking of JDM modifications, there's a company in the UK called Litchfield, I think they're called. They do Nissan GTRs. That's their big thing. And they warranty them. They actually will sell them to you brand new. So they'll buy a brand new Nissan GTR, which I don't know how many horsepower it is standard, probably 600 odd. And they'll give you something that's closer to 1,000 horsepower, and they'll warranty it for you. So they take and that's why the Japs are maybe so easily modifiable, is because they can handle it. They're built to amazing quality. They're really quality cars. Actually, our mechanic will tell you that the only cars that don't leak oil are Japanese cars.
That's probably true.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think there's also something to be said for modifying cars using better parts that the company's already made. And that is something that you can bring into the Porsche thing, where like with the original 911 air-cooled cars, you can draw from a massive parts catalog and use them on certain cars. So even though you've got an earlier car or, you know, an 80s car, you can combine it with bits and pieces.
A Singer.
To make it better.
That's what Singer's done. But I think what you're actually alluding to is the fact that your SC doesn't have hydraulic chain tensioners.
No.
And that you're that it makes you feel upset inside because the engine might grenade itself.
No, not really.
So you're basically on borrowed time.
Grenading engine has now been trademarked to Mark Salomon. Someone said, oh, Mike said that on Cogumentative.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Grenade.
I mean, I'd love to lay claim to it, but it was a very, an early 80s term. But that's an interesting one on the 9/11s. And what's amazing to see is that the pre-74 9/11s, there was a time in the 70s when they became old shapes, and they were modified to look like G-Specs, which are the impact bumpers. Now what's happening is the reverse. So you're taking G-Specs, which they made lots and lots of, and they're backdating them to look like pre-74s. And all of that, well, yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, as we say, 959 over Singer.
If it's irreversible,
maybe
just think twice about it. Mm. Yeah, maybe you've gone too far. Is that something we can all agree on?
Yeah.
But then there's a counter to that. My good friend David lives overseas, and he has a 365 Boxer Ferrari, and he has opted to not go. He's done a nut and bolt restoration, probably one of the best in the world. It's been built in Holland. And instead of going for a Ferrari color, he's done it in Bahama sand. Bahama Yellow, which is a Porsche color. And it is absolutely spectacular. So I think, you know, in the end, you pay your money.
Horses for courses.
You pay your money, and ultimately it's your car. And
each to their own.
Gotta love it.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Cool, guys.
So many cliches.
Hey?
So many cliches flying around the studio right now.
Yeah. Some good comment there. Guys, we're going to take another break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to have a little conversation about what girls think about guys in certain cars. Welcome back to the show. And in this segment, we're going to get a female opinion about cars, because, you know, a lot of people have said you guys are just, you know, these misogynistic, beer slugging, tequila drinking, you know, men, old school men. And we want a female perspective on cars, because, you know, girls like cars as well. So that's why we brought in Faye. And Faye, we kind of want to know, well, I want to know, what is it that girls look for in cars? And do you think it's something different to what guys look for in cars?
Well, let's talk about what this girl looks for in cars. Because I'm not sure, and this is probably a question, whether you're representative. Because you're an absolute petrolhead. And just to add a little anecdote before you jump in, the first Veyron arrived in, Bugatti Veyron arrived under the cloak of darkness into Joburg a few weeks ago. And on Faye's Instagram feed, she went mental, like literally, like a fangirl. Yeah, you were excited.
I basically posted every photo I could find of that car and asked everyone where she was.
Did you find it?
Yes, and within like an hour.
Really?
So what excites you about a Bugatti Veyron?
Yeah.
I've never seen one in my entire life, and it was the first one in South Africa, so I needed to go see her.
What's amazing about the Bugatti Veyron?
No, it's just a Bugatti. Like, that was just the initial idea about it.
And when you saw it, I mean, was it like everything you imagined? Were you disappointed? Seriously?
I cried.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Sure.
Wow. I did.
Have you guys all seen one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Haven't seen one on the go, but I've seen it.
So,
it's cool.
It's nice and compact.
Yeah, it's nice and compact.
It's a lot smaller than you think. I prefer the Chiron.
Yes, yeah, sure.
But, you know, I can say things like that over here, you know, because I can choose.
Yes, you can.
So, back to Tom's question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you like about cars?
What is it about them that kind of, like, excites you?
I love the mechanics of, like, the whole engine and how they look and how they sound. And it's weird. The first time I got into a race car, the feeling that I had was just, I've never experienced that before. Like,
I was just mad.
I got into an M4. That was the first, like, souped-up race car I ever got into. And it was amazing. I didn't want to get out. I just sat there, like, okay, well, it's done now. Can we go again? It was one of those BMW track days.
Yeah, it was.
And it was incredible, eh? It was amazing.
So, let's say tomorrow you win the lottery. When is the lotto payout? Tomorrow?
Which one? The European one or the American one?
South African. Let's keep it real.
Okay.
Keep it local. No, Zaka.
Let's keep it low.
I think it's at 21 million. Something like that. It's big. So, you can buy... What's the first thing you buy? The first car you buy?
Nissan R34.
So that's the...
I'm saying, like, really?
Well, hold on.
Context.
You need to provide context. I don't know Japanese cars. Like, which one is that?
So it's the Godzilla that Paul Walker drove in the first Fast and the Furious, the silver one.
It's the one that was like still called the Skyline.
Before, yeah.
Before the GTR came along and the Skyline, that name was sort of...
It's a Skyline GTR.
Pretty much.
So, but why is that better than the current one? Because the current one has had a serious model run. I mean, it's been going for
like
forever.
20 years.
No,
I'm being sarcastic. Come on.
God.
But no, it feels it's, like it's almost 9/11 long, yeah.
So what makes the R34, which is the previous generation, better than the R35, which is the current generation GTR?
I don't think there's much of a difference, but the moment I sat in one of those R34s, it was just like I knew this is the car that I had to have. And since then, I've been trying to get one. So
they
I'm definitely
really
going to
cool.
have one.
Is that a possibility? Or what
yeah,
are
it's
they
a
worth?
Very close
I mean,
is it
I
can
attainable?
Get one for about 180.
180,000?
Are you serious?
Really? I've got a friend who imports them.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
I'm just
and,
waiting
and
for
that's
them
a
to build
story.
Up a bit. Yeah.
JDM.
And she's stock, though. So I'd have to have the engine like redone and everything. But
is that a GTR?
More power.
It's a Skyline. R34 Skyline.
Skyline. Amazing.
Those ones came also in rear-wheel drive, though, didn't they?
Yeah. They
I think
did.
Only are they only rear wheel drive.
Are they?
So I know it's a straight six, and the newer one is a V6. It's still twin turbo though. It's got a turbo per three cylinders. They are amazingly tunable. Like, I think standard they actually weren't that many horsepower. They're probably like 400 horsepower.
No, gentlemen, Japanese gentlemen's agreement limits cars to 280 horsepower.
280 horsepower.
Can't be more.
Yeah.
And 180 kilometers an hour.
Yeah,
that's right.
Agreed.
So now they take that and they tune it all the way up to 1,000 horsepower, where the things are jumping off dynos.
Yeah,
proper power.
There's a place in Joburg that's done a couple of versions with full titanium blocks, and that they're pushing 2,000 horsepower.
Unbelievable!
Wow.
It is unbelievable.
So this is it.
Wow.
So that's
Lotto, and that's it.
Pretty much. I'll have one in every single color.
And a bike.
Yeah, the H2R. I'll definitely get the H2R.
BMW H2R. Okay.
So, Faye, I've got another question for you. So, like, guys and cars, you know, I want to know, what is a turnoff when it comes to guys and their cars? Like, is it something, you know, is it guys who try too hard with tuning? Is it guys who don't tune cars? Is it guys who, like, just too loud and braggy? Like, from a female point of view...
Definitely the loud and braggy.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, I won't even pay attention to it. I'll just look somewhere else.
Yeah, none of us have anything like that.
No.
No.
So would you say, like, a guy who kind of has a more subtle approach to cars? Like, I mean, you know, what do you is it?
Well, if the car looks like a sleeper and you hear it, like, go off, I'll definitely be, like, checking out the window to see what's going on, because I'll be really interested in it. But as soon as you see a car that's modded, like, you immediately know that it's been done up, and this guy's, like, into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Is that good or bad?
It's good and bad. It depends what car it is. It honestly just depends what car it is.
Okay, so give us an example. So a modded M4?
Yeah, no, that's fine. But if it's one of those GTIs, then...
A modded GTI.
There's just too many of them.
Yeah.
Everyone has one.
It's become like the ubiquitous car. Like, you know, I've got a little bit of money. I want some performance. I'm going to get Golf GTI, Golf R, and then I'm going to go into Revo and get it chipped and tuned, and then, like, get this loud, obnoxious exhaust system and go up and down the Greenside Strip.
Exactly.
You know?
So I had a GTI, and I never did that. So I restrained myself. It's tough,
that's
though.
That's good at least.
Because it makes them really fast. It's actually really cool.
But that you wouldn't even know that it's done. It's more like when you add, like, the rims and stuff like that. And you've mentioned a couple of times already, which is damaging the pride of all of the gentlemen in this room, but that Porsches are a no-go.
It is devastating.
I'm just saying this. It really is devastating. And we're sitting here with Porsche T-shirts and hats on the table, which Nadav is gladly dishing out to each of the participants.
Well,
the T-shirts are nice.
The T-shirts are nice. But
thank you.
Porsche T-shirts are nice. Porsche's not
Porsche's
so much.
Not. So what's a turnoff about the Porsche brand?
They make me think of, like, Beatles.
What?
Instantly. They just do. I don't know why.
But they are kind of, like, I mean, 911s are kind of Beatle. I mean, you can see the evolution.
Well,
you can kind of see where they came from. And the early cars are kind of, like, Beatle-esque.
Absolutely. I need to say this. So we love 911s, we love old 911s, but I think it's only us guys. I think it's just us.
No. They are widely regarded.
One or two
they are
other
widely
people.
Regarded. But I think this is like some valuable information though. So if you're a middle-aged male who's going through some sort of crisis, and is buying a
Porsche. Your body's changing.
Buying a Porsche. Buying a Porsche to try and reverse the body aging process.
Don't.
Then
yeah, don't do
it's
it.
Not, you know, stay away from it. Rather go and buy a Nissan. So I've got a theory though, and not to elevate Mr. Paluta, but that the Aston Martin is a car that women find appealing for a man to drive. Is it true that?
And yeah, it's a nice car. It's a really good car.
Because it's kind of subtle. It doesn't shout that much.
Yeah, but it's classy. Still shows off enough.
It shows off enough, but yeah. It's not over the top.
Exactly.
Like a Ferrari.
Yeah, no, that's too much.
Gentleman's kind of showing off.
Yeah, Ferraris and Lamborghinis are a no-go. Yeah.
Especially when their doors go.
Yeah, this is important information. It is.
So, doors that open up.
I think it's pretty cool, but it's so difficult getting out of those cars.
Elegantly, really yes.
How do we feel about McLaren?
I actually don't know. I've never been in one, so okay. I can't really give a fair opinion on that at all.
Someone rocks up in a McLaren. I mean, you're an early millennial. I'm saying anyone rocks up in a McLaren. It doesn't have to be a guy or a girl. Or how do we feel about the brand? I'm interested in your.
It's a really nice brand, but I'll just like look at it and continue doing what I'm doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. Really,
I agree. I agree with Faye. I see, like.
It's nice, but it's not like a head turner.
No. Is this discretion maybe what's so nice about it?
What, a McLaren?
Yeah.
Can't be discreet.
It's not. It's a cookie cutter car. They all look the same. It's like McLaren has a cookie cutter and they have this big thing of dough and they're like, let's make a new car. And they go,
dunk. No. No. The 720 and the Senna and the new Longtail. No, they are all very different.
What cars are an absolute no-go for men?
With exotic cars, I'll definitely say Ferraris and Lambos. Like, it's just too much for me.
You're
like, it's
killing
just
me.
Too much.
You're absolutely destroying me here.
Fantastic. I promise. I nearly drove into someone because I saw an R32 and I was busy staring out the window. I nearly drove into another car in front of me.
But like, and then let's talk about like normal, average,
an everyday car. Yeah. So what is the everyday car equivalent of me wearing a jumper that my grandmother made me?
What about a Mercedes Benz? C180 diesel. That's like a jumper. That's like a jumper type car.
220 diesel.
220 diesel. No one would buy that.
Anyway, that's generic. It doesn't matter.
What about a 2 Series? If the guy's driving a 2 Series.
No, but it's a 2 Series.
So what does that mean?
Nah, maybe if it's like an M4 or something, then that would be interesting. But if it's a RS3 or RS6, now that is nice. I love the RS6.
RS6. Oh, wagons.
The wagons especially. Absolutely love it, Absolutely love it.
See, look at this. You're making the good doctor's heart
warm. I love
it. I'm an Audi fan.
Because he loves M4s as well. It's one of his favorite cars.
I'm the biggest fan. I'll shout out to all M4s out there. I'm not going to buy it. Don't
worry. Kawasaki H2R.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm asking for a friend here. Midlife crisis, you know, got a little bit of cash, not too much. What is like a good midlife crisis car to buy if you're a guy and you don't want to embarrass yourself? Like you still want to have like, you know.
Maybe get yourself like an M6.
Okay.
Yeah, midlife crisis, like it's a good car.
The convertible, the two-door?
The two-door, definitely.
Convertible or coupe?
Coupe.
Ah,
yeah.
Nice.
How do you feel about convertibles?
It messes up my hair. I'm not a fan of it.
Me too. Also, messes my hair. It's terrible. Yeah. Awful.
It's a real struggle. It is.
Yeah, it is.
The struggle is real.
Yeah. All right. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to have our first challenge. Welcome back to the segment in which we're going to do our first ever challenge. I'm quite excited about this. It's the secondhand car challenge. So what I told the guys to do, we all have 150,000 rand and we had to go out onto the interweb and find a car that we, you know, could buy for this money. It had to be kind of cool, had to be kind of quirky, maybe fast, maybe comfortable. And basically, we're going to pitch these cars, and then at the end of it, Faye is going to choose the best one.
Brilliant.
Excellent. So, can
I go first?
Of course you can. Okay. Do it.
So I've got three.
Three?
Show them to, yeah, three.
Three?
No, you only like to choose one.
No, don't say, you never said one.
I did. One car, 150,000 rand.
Okay, well then I'm going to go.
Okay, but tell us your runners-up.
No,
I'll tell you my runners-up. So my number one choice, Faye.
No, start off with the third. You don't know how to do this,
okay,
man.
Okay, third, second, first.
Just
like calm down.
Yeah.
Standard protocol, man.
Okay, third, for 135,000 rand, is an Alfa GT
3.2. I like that.
Nice car, in red. Nice one. Not Ferrari red. This is Nissan GTR red. Okay?
Okay.
That's not my final car. Then we have the Mini Cooper S. 150 grand.
What?
Yeah. The turbocharged one? Turbocharged or the supercharged one?
It's turbocharged Mark 2. Yeah.
Oh, so it's a turbocharged one.
Mm. Yeah.
Lovely car.
It is a nice car.
Great to drive.
Yeah, cool.
And completely left field for me, my number one choice is a Land Rover Series 2.
Oh, jeez. Like.
In British Racing Green.
Wow, I'm shocked.
What year is that? 1965?
Does it come with a free pair of Wellington boots?
It is 1965.
Isn't it 1965?
1965.
How's that, eh?
I just think that's cool.
Fresh off the streets of Nairobi. Just having done.
You can put the box in it. You can put a bike on the back of that. Kids? Comfortably. And on same color as your Kawasaki.
I must admit,
definitely
I think it's
not
very
the same
cool.
Okay, those are mine.
Okay, so you're going with the Land Rover?
Yeah.
For how much?
Well, going on this reaction, I don't know. I think
it's cool, though. No, I think it's cool. And actually, I was on the highway on Sunday, and I saw a Huey 166 short wheelbase.
That's kind of what this is based on.
It really is, yeah.
It's 150 on the nose.
Okay, so you're going with that. You can only choose one.
Yeah, I'm
going
to go with that.
All right, cool. Mike.
It's a good thing you don't have to run it as well for 150 grand, because there's no way that thing's on the road at 150.
Okay, Mike.
All right, so I'm going to talk about a car that I found on the weekend, having discussed with a fan of the Pajero, and Mark is actually a Pajero fan as well. But then I want to talk about a real life example, and honestly, I'm giving a top tip. I think it's a car to be going for. So the thing that we found on the internet was a Mitsubishi Pajero Evo, which they made 2,500 of. It was officially 276 horsepower and limited to 180 k's an hour because it was a JDM car. And I think that thing is epically cool. It was like 135,000 rand. It might have been 120,000. The problem is it's registered on BOTS plates, which does pose a bit of a problem. But I think given that it's right-hand drive, could come into the country. Now, I think that both of the cars I'm talking about are ostensibly classics. The car I want to talk about, though, is a car that I've taken a plunge on. So the Porsche 928, which is a front-engine transaxle car, which means the gearbox is at the back. Those cars have started really running overseas in terms of value. For good S's and particularly manuals, you're talking $30,000 to $40,000.
You said the gearbox is in the back. Tell us what kind of gearbox it has.
It has a Mercedes gearbox.
But how many gears?
Four.
And are they accessible through a gear lever?
No.
Does it have a clutch?
No.
So it's an automatic. Automatic.
So the thing is that you won't get a manual. That's fair. You won't get a manual for 150,000. But we bought one for 55,000 rand. Granted, it's come to about 85,000 rand now just to get it onto the road. And we're almost there, but we'll come in at under 150,000 rand for a good, very, very clean right-hand drive car. Now, I reckon that in terms of collectability, it's only a matter of time that people start waking up. And just in fact, there's a Porsche transaxle group, and there was someone who put out a message today saying that there's a collector in Singapore who's looking for right-hand drive S, willing to pay up to 250. Now, I'm saying, guys, Get them while they're still cheap. There are a lot of ropey ones around there, so be very careful. Sometimes it might be that the person has to give you the car, and then you'll still come in at 150 grand.
That's realistic.
But that's my tip.
Okay.
Top tip.
Not bad. The good doctor.
So I decided to raid the back catalog a little bit, so look into personal experience and see if there's anything that I've driven or have owned that I know is great. To recommend 450,000, and I actually found exactly what I was looking for.
what I'm looking for too, actually.
And I think Thomas is going to be very excited.
I am.
And oddly enough, Mike has showed signs of excitement about these things in the last week, and I was quite surprised.
I'm relieved. But I thought it was a Toyota.
What I'm putting it on the what I'm putting on the table at 150,000 rand tonight with 5 rand change is a 2012 Renault Clio RS Gordini.
That is very cool.
Let's have a look.
Mm. So that's a Clio 200.
Oh, I like that.
That's 148 kilowatts. And let me tell you guys, I've driven a few cars, and this thing is brilliant.
It is properly good. It is
a properly brilliant car.
I can testify to that because I've driven them all.
Right. So there you go. And you are a professional.
You are a professional.
I'm a professional. And that's only done 80,000 Ks.
And this particular one's only done 80,000 Ks. We owned one for 5 years. It was completely and utterly reliable. Don't let anyone tell you anything different. The maintenance costs were negligible. And the truth is, nothing that I've driven, I don't know, front-wheel drive has handled like that car. It is amazing. It pivots around your hips. It has so much front-end grip. It's never understeered. It is an incredible little pocket rocket.
Great
and
car.
It's got 4 seats. It's a hatchback. It's practical. It's got ISOFIX. It's got Bluetooth. Fantastic little
Can thing. You load a couch into it?
That's relatively
Why
big.
Would you want
probably
to?
Good.
You can in a Series 2 Land Rover.
A small couch.
Can you get to 100 in your Land Rover?
No. Very steep downhill, yes. Yeah.
And you're not going to stop either.
So there I'm putting that on the table. Okay. So who's next?
It is me. The last of us to go. So I'm also, I kind of thought, what haven't I owned? I want to own something that I haven't ever owned before, a brand that I've never had before. And I try to find something that depreciates a lot. And that's normally French cars. It's not a Renault, but it's a Peugeot. And it's a Peugeot 208 GTI, 3-door, in a splendid burgundy red, 2013. And it's only done 88,000 Ks. So pretty much the same as your Clio. It's got a 1.6 turbo motor, which was also in the Mini.
So good motor.
Good motor, 147 kilowatts, 275 torque. It's a good little car. Comes with everything, satellite navigation, Bluetooth, everything.
It's nice.
Yeah.
But why would you rather have that than a Mini?
Because Minis are for men who
Careful.
Like hanging out in the dog park.
Moving swiftly along, why would you want to have either of those but over on. The Clio?
Doesn't our friend Jacques have a Mini that's about the same kind of price?
Yeah,
Mini GP.
No, but that's a serious car.
Yeah, Jacques has a Mini.
It's a works GP.
And no, it's not the same kind of price. No. It's roughly double that.
Yeah, it's double.
It doesn't quite come in over 150 more.
Let's put ours together and buy that.
No, I'm keeping mine.
Crazy little thing.
Yeah, so from my Peugeot, I walk away with 50 rand change, so I can go and buy myself a Coke to drink when it inevitably breaks down after I've driven it 10 Ks out of
the
dealership.
Well, that's the thing, actually. You three have chosen cars that are definitely going to break down. I've chosen a car that's probably got the best build quality of all time.
Mm.
If it breaks, I'm not debating the fact that it's going to cost you the same amount as you've paid to buy the car to fix it, but it's proper quality.
It's quality, but it's definitely going to break.
It's going to be expensive.
It's definitely going to catch a light. At some point, there's going to be smoke coming out of the dashboard.
Which one of you did 5 years and 50,000 Ks in a Clio that never broke down?
Mike, yes, but that was the first 50,000 Ks.
Tell us about your first 928. What kind of bills did that come with?
I bought it for 42,000.
And?
I spent 120 on it.
I rest my case. What went wrong, Mike? Something small.
No, that's the problem. Is actually if you buy a ropey one, like it's going to cost you a lot to get it right. But the thing is, once they're right, they're good cars. They're
once
solid,
they're right.
They're
once.
Look, your car, I mean, that thing, you don't have enough money just to fill the thing with oil.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Alpha. I'm changing. The Alpha is far. Maybe that's
in some cultures you're not improving.
Okay,
so now it comes down to crunch time.
Yes.
We've all presented our cars. Faye. We've all put them on the table. Faye, which is the one that gets your nod, your vote of approval?
I was going to say the Evo. I was going to say the Evo.
But I didn't choose
but
it.
But the Renault.
Ah, very nice. Thank you.
And
everyone.
In second place?
Thank you, Faye.
Evo.
Third place?
Lovely.
I don't know. No, you definitely lost.
Listen, I wouldn't,
I wouldn't choose mine either. After seeing the others, I'm with, I like the Renault too.
Okay.
Cool.
I like that. So
that is, but yeah, I think that's a great car. Great car, Renault. Very, very cool.
I appreciate your support. Thank you, Faye.
So yeah.
Do we have time to speak about the Mitsubishi?
What Mitsubishi?
The Pajero.
I don't know. I think we can save that for another time.
Okay. Let's do that.
We've had some good consumer advice in this segment. You know, proper buying advice that people can go out and
It's been good, I think.
And go out and buy a Renault.
So yeah. Guys, thanks a lot for joining us today, and thank you, Faye, for coming in and giving your insightful knowledge on cars and tuning and JDM.
Thank you, guys.
And yeah, we'll probably have you back sometime
again. Yeah,
that
would be awesome.
Do you want to give a little shout out on your Instagram so people can follow you, or are you?
No, don't even stress about it.
She's got so many already, you know.
Yeah,
cool.
What's another 400? Guys, thanks a lot, and we'll join us again next week when we just talk more cars, stuff, bikes, dogs,
Land Rovers,
oil leaks.
Okay.
Cool. Guys, cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.